I also wish to extend greetings to the saints. What a privilege to be called a saint. What a privilege to sit in heavenly places. But it's not just for us to enjoy for ourselves. As we know from scriptural lessons and as we know from the Word, we're called to call others. That's what we want to focus on this morning. I believe we've had such a wonderful devotional. Praise the Lord for that. Thank the brother for that. And that last illustration of a quiet witness that was constant is not to be overlooked in value compared with other methods that are more visible. That needs to be part of each one of us. I also want to hit that in the message this morning. This morning, this title that was given for the third message, Evangelism, Practical Techniques to Increase Effectiveness. Practical Techniques to Increase Effectiveness. I wish there was just a few things that any church could do and quickly learn and put it into practice and the people would come rolling in. Many sheep in the fold, many souls saved, faithful ones to carry on the work. We do have a calling, we do have instructions. But there's no specific recipe that just guarantees success. The principles are the same. The techniques are many. This morning we do want to look at some practical techniques to increase effectiveness. Turn to Matthew 4 for a beginning, a few verses to start us in our thinking. Matthew 4, drop down to verses 18 through 20. We go to the Master for the instructions. He's the one that has given us our work. It's only right that we receive how to and what we are to be and do from Him. Matthew 4, verse 18. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brethren, Simon called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And he said unto them, Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And they straightway left their nets and followed him. And that was the beginning of a great fishing experience for those two, and for others also. I have a deep philosophy about fishing for souls that I want to share with you this morning. It works for natural fish, and it's something we need to do for the spiritual fish we want to catch. Go to where the fish are and do something to get them out of the water and into the boat. That's it. Go to where the fish are and do something to get them out of the water and into the boat. Isn't that what fishing is all about? Isn't that what reaping in souls is all about? Find them, bring them in. Easy enough, or isn't it? Seems to be a slight paradox. Our brother has hit on some of those subjects a little bit this morning. On the one hand, Christ says, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him. So we would say, this is God's work. Why are we stressing and toiling and talking about methods? This is God's work. He will build the church. There's two sides to every coin. Sometimes a little visual helps us to remember a point. two sides to every coin. And if we only look at the one side, we cannot declare with certainty exactly how this coin looks until we look at the backside. Oh, that's the rest of the story. That's the other side of the coin. It's all the same coin, but there are two sides. So on the one side, it says, I will build, Christ talking. On the other side, it says, I will make you fishers. So we see that God has a part in his work, and he calls us. He calls us to a part in that work also. And that's what we want to focus on this morning. Many messages have been preached about God building the church, what God does for us. This morning, we're going to focus on our side and our responsibility. I will make you fishers. In another place, Jesus said in John 20:21, he says, as my Father has sent me, so send I you. So we can see the chain of command and the work, the workload or the work order coming down through. As the Father has sent me to do this work, so I send you, talking to his disciples. There's our calling. Paul says it very, very, puts it in a very neat package when he says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So, no glory to us if we have been a faithful servant and done our part. In the end, God gives the increase. We need planters, we need waters, but God will give the increase. Then he sums it up in verse 9 of 1 Corinthians 3. He says, laborers together with God. That's my challenge. That's my, I believe, all of our calling, that we are laborers together with God. I want to encourage us in that this morning. There was a time when the disciples were fishing all night. It says they fished all night and caught nothing. I don't think I have ever fished all night, but I've certainly gone fishing and caught nothing. I know the feeling a little bit there. It seems that happens more often to me than the other way when I'm natural fishing. Here Jesus shows up and he says, try it again. Throw on the other side. Well, they're close to the shore. They're not even out there in the deep. They had tried everything they knew. They had put all their energy into it for an extended period of time and had no success. And Jesus says, try it one more time. Do it there. We know the end of the story. There was more fish than they could handle. But here's the question. Who told them where to fish? Okay. Christ, of course. Who pulled the net in? Was Christ there doing it for him? No. He gives direction, but he's looking to us. He's looking to us to pull that net. Christ tells where, gives us some instructions how, but we pull the net. He told them where to fish, but he expected them to get it. The rest was in their hands. They had to throw the net. They had to pull the net. So how shall we fish? We all are humans with senses. We see, we hear, we feel. Those are the ones that I want to focus on this morning. How do we receive a message? So how can we transmit a message? Because it's all about a message coming to an individual so that he can respond. With men's eyes, they see, number one, your life. And with their eyes, they see literature and can read and receive the message. So it's a visual thing. With their ears, they're hearing. They can hear preaching. They can hear recorded messages. They can hear a simple conversation as they speak with you and maybe ask some questions or listen to you explaining something about Christ. When it comes to the feeling, I'm going to relate it to the heart. They feel. They sense. This is right. This is truth. This is love. I want it. So we appeal to the senses of an individual as he can absorb and bring in the message, praying he will respond. You know, it's just like advertising. It's just like advertising. It's a process. In my business, I have a furniture store, and I advertise. Why would I advertise? I need people to come in the door and make a choice. So how do we advertise? Well, in my business, I have a billboard on the highway, visual. And the idea is to stir interest that they will come and seek farther. Just, it's informative to let them know where I am and a little bit of what I have, advertising. Or an ad in the paper. Here are some products we have. But I'm really not looking for them to pick up the phone and say, I want this, this, and this. Just send it to me. That doesn't happen. Not in my business. Some businesses work that way. Mine doesn't. It's an enticement to come and see. There's more that you haven't experienced yet. I go to home shows. I set up a display. I show and tell there in a smaller way than back at the store. But here's some stuff that represents what we have that you could see and think about back at our store. Again, a few sales there, but really it's an enticement to come to the store. Come to where the biggest display is and to where you can make a decision. Finally, if my advertising has been a success, they enter my door. Now they can see the product. They can hear about the product. They can feel and touch the product. Hopefully they make a choice. Say, yes, I want it. That's when all my advertising has paid off and I finally have a customer. Yes, I want it. Well, isn't it a little the same way as we're looking for techniques to increase our effectiveness in missionary and in evangelism? I'm not talking about over there somewhere. I'm talking about your home church, your home setting, wherever you live, whatever you do. Isn't it really our life an advertisement? It's a calling. It's a come, listen, see. There's more to learn. There's more to this than meets the eye. It's a little rhyme that I learned long ago. I think it works for advertising. I think it works for some other things too. It goes like this. He who has a thing to sell and goes and whispers in a well is not as apt to get the dollars as he who climbs a tree and hollers. The meaning is simple. Be visible. Be available. Let people know. Let people know. Manus Simmons had 4 points that he made. Can't remember them all right now. One of them is that we need a peaceful church. We need a pure church. The one I'm going to pick out this morning is he said, we need a visible church, not people that are hiding in the closet with their faith, having it just to themselves and God, but people that are willing to stand up and show Christ. A visible church. That's how we advertise. I believe that people come to the faith basing some decisions on intellectual choices, basing their decision on some choices that they consciously make. Yes, there are feelings involved, absolutely, before and after and all through. We have feelings, very important. But I believe people make their choice based on information. And it's up to us to provide information. Number one, I am a sinner. If you're saved, don't you remember that time in your life, in your experience? I am a sinner. I remember that. Horrible condemnation is what I felt. I am a sinner. This is the first step. And then there has to come that realization, God can and God will save me. There's hope. I am a sinner, but God can and God will save me if I come to Him. After the experience of salvation, it's, I now need to live righteously. A change. A calling. And beyond that, there's the church. Here's a group of people to be part of. They are walking righteously and will help me to walk righteously. And I think this is the process for people to come into the church to God. I'm a sinner. God can save me. I now need to live righteous. Here is the family I'm going to be part of. Righteousness and growth is there. Our advertising, our methods need to think along those lines. Helping people come to God. Helping people come to God. Since this was intended to be a practical message with ideas, I'm going to start on some ideas. Those of you that are taking notes, I have quite a few here. I haven't been involved in all these ideas. Our church isn't involved in all of these ideas. But I love hearing what other churches are doing to reach out in their communities. I think we can learn a lot from other people's experiences. Like I said, there's no single little recipe we just put in gear and that brings them in. But there's many things being done out there to be a visual witness. Throughout the Bible, some of these are obvious. We could start with preaching. We could say, Paul, what were his methods? What did he do to help growth in the church? He often followed along, and when he got to a city, he'd go to the Jews that existed there and walk into their synagogue and start talking to them. When that ran aground and wouldn't go any further, he would approach other people who seemed to have a godly bent. Well, sometimes it was women praying at the river. Other times it was Gentiles that had an interest in Judaism but maybe never quite felt accepted. At one time, he spent several years in a school teaching as people came to him. Sometimes he was in the marketplace. Sometimes he was in a public park. But his idea was, open my mouth and speak. That's not all of us. I don't think we'll all be a Paul. I don't think we're all called to be a Paul. And there's many other ideas that can enhance the work. But we do need to start, I guess, with preaching as... The Bible says, how can they hear if no one speaks? How can they hear if no one sends the preacher to preach to them? Another big one is literature. And I suppose an entire sermon could be preached on literature and what it has done and what it can do. What do I have here but a piece of literature that gives us our instruction, the printed Bible? Beyond that, broken down in smaller pieces, literature can be sent anywhere in the world, practically. Literature can cross cultural and language barriers. A little tract can be translated into many, many languages and put into thousands, may I say millions, of hands to be read. Literature is a terrific part of the work. I would encourage all of us to be involved with literature. Give to it. Distribute it. Write it. In Romania, it's the seat of truth. Beside the still waters, here, there. I know there's one in Central America that has went into thousands of homes with constant teaching month after month. Literature, so important. I like when churches have a rack at the back available for anyone who comes in the door. Pick up literature. Other things I've seen. I like what Seymour's doing with an apple butter cook-off. I think that's great. I hear the community comes in and there's lots of people here buying and mingling and talking and enjoying the day. That's wonderful. I like when churches do community things. Things that aren't just about preaching, but things that start opening the door of advertisement, if you will, to come and see there's something here. And beyond that, there's something more. But a non-offensive, passive almost approach to opening the door to come and see a little bit, because there's more behind that if you have any interest. I love that. I love those kind of things. I have seen booths at home shows. A church rents a booth at a home show, and instead of a product, they're simply representing their church and their programs and their literature and their things. Maybe we should do that. And have somebody there, available to talk, available to give out literature, available to simply answer questions. Booths at home shows. I heard of a church that makes a meal once a year and invites the community to come into their gym, and they take donations, and it raises a lot of money for their school. But the community feels welcome to come there and sit down and eat a home-cooked meal with friends and with the church people. And they serve lots of people. It's a community outreach. Come in. Get to know us. Just recently, I heard of widow's suppers. I never heard of such a thing. Somebody said, we should do a widow's supper. We'd like to get started doing a widow's supper. I'm like, what's that? They explained it to me. They said it's you simply invite all the widows in your neighborhood. Every family that knows a widow, a neighbor or somebody, a widow, that she's lost her husband, she's alone, you invite them to a supper. You make a supper. The youth can sing. They're served at the tables. You sit and visit. You just give them a good time out at the church, in the gym, wherever it's done. A widow's supper. That's neat. I like that. When we were in Moldova, we had church every Sunday morning, every Sunday evening, every Wednesday evening. You could invite people. It was a little difficult to get people to come. Every now and then we'd get a visitor. But when we did a Christmas program and had the children singing and had poems and invited the people to come to a Christmas program, we couldn't believe what happened. They filled our house. They packed out the room where we normally worship. It was like standing room only. They were reluctant to just come to a Sunday morning service, but they were quite ready to come to a Christmas program where the children are going to sing. We also preached to them. That didn't stop them. The next year they came again. They liked the Christmas program. And that was a real encouragement to us. There's tent meetings. We do that at Farmington. We've done it for 2 years now. Tent meetings, where maybe people will find it a little easier to come there than a normal church service. We don't get a lot of response out of that. Some. We have some community people coming. But when we have a Christmas program, and it's the school children, I think we get at least as many, if not more, people for that as we do for the tent meetings. Again, the children, they have a work. There's something they can do. A group of children singing about the birth of Christ in this occasion. Maybe it can be an Easter program, whatever. People will come for something like that. Some churches have online sites with the computer, information, messages, maybe some pictures, maybe some statements about faith. That has certainly been successful in reaching out and giving information to people that are searching. There's disaster help. Young people, older people, anybody who's physically fit to go and help where there was a disaster. It spreads goodwill. It shows love. It shows that someone's willing to donate their time, money, efforts to help somebody else have a roof over their head. It's a wonderful display of Christian love. I would encourage you to be strong in that, to continue to do that. Young men, it's somewhere you can pour some energy into and feel good about the time spent there. And it leaves a witness for Jesus Christ. There's street meetings, singing, handing out literature. There's prison ministries. And I've heard of hospital chaplain ministry, and I'd like to learn more about that one. But men, I hear that sometimes a man is simply available and listed at the hospital as an available chaplain. If someone wants to talk, there's a phone number to call. And you simply go in, and you listen, and you talk. You can comfort. You can give them the gospel message. They might have needs. They have fears. They're facing an uncertain future. They're hurting. They need help. And at that hour of need, someone needs to be available. And it might not be anything you do daily, and yet it could be at a big hospital. But maybe there should be several on the list. If you can't go, another brother can. But it's a time in people's lives as they lay there waiting for an operation or having faced the fact that they have an incurable disease, that they are willing and ready, and someone needs to be there with the message at that point. Just recently, speaking with Brother John Weaver, I found out their church has a reading room. I never heard of that one before. They have rented a small building in town, and every Friday and Saturday night, it's open to whoever wants to come. They can come in. They can read. They can visit. They can talk with someone who's willing to have the time to sit there and talk this evening. Every Friday and Saturday night, several couples are manning the reading room. If no one comes, they can have a nice time of fellowship together. Great idea. Up at Pelkey, I understand that sometimes they go to the local college, and at Christmas time, when it's Christmas break, everybody leaves and goes home to their families. But there's foreign students there who have nowhere to go. They're thousands of miles from home in a strange culture, and they don't know people. And here comes the church saying, come to our house for Christmas dinner. Why don't you spend time with us? And they take them into their homes, and they host them, and they feed them a meal, and they just visit with them. They might be from China. They might be Buddhists. They might be who knows what. But it's a time that they sit down, relax in a Christian atmosphere with Christian people, and simply have the opportunity to talk. And the Christian has the opportunity to witness. Beautiful idea. Of course, inviting someone to come to church is always available too in your everyday acquaintances, the people you meet. Don't neglect to invite people to come to church. I'm not talking about pressure. I'm not talking about insisting. I'm not talking about arguing. A warm, friendly invitation. There's things like children's clubs, where, especially in the cities, where children have time on their hands, where they can come to a meeting themselves on public transportation or walk, and where parents might be glad if the children have somewhere to go and something to do. They don't have to take them. They don't have to be involved. There's children's clubs where children can come together, have a good time with other children, being instructed, learning some songs, learning some verses, going through a Bible study, whatever it might be. That has been quite effective in certain situations and places. There's summer Bible schools where we invite the community children to come in along with our own children. There's nursing home singing. I'm sure your church is involved in some of these. I'm hoping that our church can become involved in some more of these things, more than we have been. I've mentioned this before, and I want to say it again. I think there's a great opportunity for the sisters in what I'm going to call preparing baby bundles. Your papers will list off times the people who have recently had a baby at the hospital. Send them a package. Congratulate them. Encourage them in their new responsibility. Tuck in a 101 Bible stories for children. Maybe Beside the Still Waters for them. A little track on raising your child for God. A few articles of clothing. And if they ever care to visit the church, here's where it is. I think that could be a great ministry. Getting together at Sewing Circle and preparing these bundles. Someone responsible for getting the names and addresses and sending them out. Just things that we can reach into the community and let them know we are here and we love you. If we can help you with anything, please feel free. Please come. And just plain good works. Just plain good works. A neighbor has a need. Some older person needs their yard cleaned up. Some firewood needs to be cut. The possibilities are endless if we look for them, if we want to. We can find things that we can do to help others. And now I would like to focus a little bit. Those are programs that you can say need to be somewhat organized, and we need the church behind it. We need team effort. But what about personal things that you can do? You won't need to ask the permission of the church. You yourself. And this is extremely important. People don't want to just see a nameless, faceless organization to be attracted to. They're attracted to individual people who have Christ shining in their face. Someone they can talk to. Someone they can connect with. Someone that makes them feel like they're loved and they're wanted. Number one, to be a personal witness, you need a godly lifestyle. Young people, the temptations of youth are many. I've been there. And it can be a time of what's important. Why do we have to do this? Let's do that. Let's try something new. I don't know. I don't like this. I like that. There's a time of uncertainty as we begin to grasp church and life and God and what's important. But you will not attract anyone to the faith unless you have a godly lifestyle. They have to see a young person that stays away from sin. Because out there, people are indulging in everything. And for them to see a young person that will not and walks with God is a breath of fresh air and an extreme attraction to righteousness and godliness. You have to have a godly lifestyle. And on the physical side, you have to have a godly appearance. I'm not going to define all that, but it's a thought you need to have and realize. If someone's going to be impressed with you and your lifestyle, the first thing they do is see you. You have to have a godly appearance. You also need a relaxed, friendly, approachable manner. If you go through life scowling, rushing, don't take the time to talk to anybody, half grumpy if you do say something, who's going to ask you about anything? You're going to scare them away. If you were looking for information and you had two people before you, one smiling, relaxed, and one looks like a thunderstorm, who are you going to talk to? You know the old saying, one teaspoon of honey attracts more bees than a gallon of vinegar. Just some niceness, some approachableness. How many of you girls have ever been approached at Walmart and somebody asked you a question? I see a few hands. Everybody put them up real high. Let's see this. Look at that. Why? Why? Ask yourself why. Somebody saw something and thought, you know, I want to know, and I think they'll tell me. Embrace that idea. Don't fear or ever despise the fact that people come and ask you, are you Amish? Or whatever else they might say. They might have their words wrong. They might have only a passing interest. They might ask, I don't know, slightly embarrassing questions or maybe put you on the spot. I don't know. But look at it this way. It's a beautiful opportunity to start talking. What a ministry. What an open possibility. You never know who will respond to the message. I'm going to throw a few brief stories out here. They're an encouragement to me. And if someone hears this through a recording or whatever, that happens to be one of those people, it's an encouragement to me, so I'm going to pass it on to others. Did you know that, of course, a lot of you would know and some of you don't, it doesn't matter, there's a whiskey named Jack Daniels that has sold, may I say, thousands of gallons of alcohol in this land. But did you know that one of Jack Daniels' grandchildren is in a conservative Mennonite church? Hooray. There's a woman in the Mennonite church that was a founding member of the NOW, Now Group, National Organization for Women. For many years now, she has been a church member, a faithful church member. I know of a policeman who became interested in the Mennonite church, and for quite some time, he would wear a police uniform in his cruiser during the week and a plain suit on Sunday when he went to visit the church. Hooray again. The uniform's gone of the police officer. He continues to wear his plain suit. What I'm saying is he made a choice. He made a choice what's most important. And I've heard of the Vietnam War veteran who came to the church and became a bishop in a conservative Mennonite church. Don't ever look at a person and think, they'll never come. Sometimes we do that. I've done that. But in Romania, you've probably heard the story before, I saw an old man who had wasted his life with drinking and smoking. He would drink until he was such a pitiful sight to see, laying in the courtyard, wedded himself, past consciousness, old. Now, when does an old person in such a wasted condition ever turn their life around? God did it for him. He made a choice. God honored that choice and gave him the power to live above sin. That old man spent the rest of his life a victorious Christian, and he had a word for Jesus Christ. I never expected it. I would have never expected that to happen. It did. You never know who you will touch. What little bit of advertisement will start the process, the planting, the watering, until it brings fruit. It may not be in your church. It may not be in the Mennonite church. It may not be anything you ever see in your lifetime. There was an interesting article where 80 Christians were interviewed and asked, how did you come to the Lord? Only a few, there were a few, walked into a church, heard the gospel message, and responded. That was a very small minority. Most of them said that it was a process. They met someone that talked to them. They saw someone, a godly lifestyle. They asked a question. Someone helped them. Someone was kind. They read something. And in the end, they made a choice. We're advertisers. Keep advertising the product. We're advertisers. Do something along the way to help a person get closer to God. God will draw them. But we're the people casting the net. God, Jesus said, I want you, fishers, of men. There's some people that bless my heart. I'm going to tell you a story about myself, my wife, and I. Probably some of you heard this before. We were a young married couple and had our first child. And we were looking for a church. We were looking for a different church home. We wanted to pursue looking for a church where Sunday school was a reality, Bible schools, mission work, some things along that line. And we spent some time traveling. We went to see some relatives in Florida, my sister, and checked out a little church in Georgia, and we were headed up east toward Pennsylvania, and I knew that, you know, this was back before I had church directories and a lot of other things, or a computer, or you know, information wasn't as easily available. And I was a little ignorant as to who was where and where the churches were, okay? So I know there's churches in Virginia. So we drive into Virginia, and Harrisonburg seems to be a name. I know there's some churches at Harrisonburg, Virginia. Well, what are we going to do? How do you go find a church? I drove into Harrisonburg, Virginia, and somewhere there on the edge of town, I don't know if it was actually in the edge of Harrisonburg, where it was, there was this little convenience store. So I walked in, and what do? I asked the simplest, dumbest question. Are there any Mennonites around here? This is the beginning of our search. Yeah, they're all over. Okay. Not a real big help yet. It's good to know we're in the territory. Yeah, if you just drive right up the road here, there's Mennonites up there. Okay, let's go. There's Mennonites up this road. We drive up the road, and there's a man. We'll get out and ask him. I mean, we're looking, right? I get out and ask the man, I said, are there any Mennonites around here? He said, I'm a Mennonite. Okay. I looked at him, and he looks at me. I look at his little daughter, and he looks at my wife. I suppose like we're there looking at each other, and he says, maybe the kind of Mennonite you're looking for is right up the road. There's a place right up here. Why don't you go see them? He somehow sensed that I was probably looking for something different than what he was. Bless his heart. He sent me in the right direction. I'm trying to think of the name of the little business he sent us to. It was an farm equipment place. I want to say Barnhart. That's not right. What are some Mennonite names there? Who can help me? Barn something. I'm not sure. And we went, and here's a man, elderly gentleman, and we told him our quest. We're looking for Mennonites, Mennonite church. Oh, he was happy to see us. He invited us in and talked to us. Here's this young couple just looking for Mennonites. He takes us in. And his wife's not at home. Well, that didn't stop him. He got out the stuff. He was going to fry up some hamburgers for supper. His son came around and found out what's going on and offered some candy to our little one. We only had one child. And it was just a warm feeling. We found somebody that was willing to talk to us and give us some more information. Well, he ended up being a brother there in the Southeastern Conference Church. And the story just goes on. He called somebody else and sent us to the next place. We ended up sleeping at somebody's house overnight. We told them we were kind of interested maybe in a smaller church. So they told us about the churches in West Virginia. Next day we drove up there. They made arrangements. We would go to a home. They would take us in. They would feed us. They would send us to the next place. We got to visit people. We ended up clear up there in, I think, a place called Brushy Run or something like that. Fred Miller came into my line of acquaintances through that little thing. I had the blessing of sitting down with Fred Miller one of those evenings, him and his wife, to a very simple meal of potato soup, shared in love. It's things like that that we can do. We can do, if we will, if we're open to it. A little thing, just to where you can feel a love and acceptance and a warm hand of fellowship, a welcome in. I never did move to West Virginia. Never did move to Virginia. Those people have blessed my heart and have blessed it ever since. And they're the things that I saw there, so much of it was a shining example of what to do when you sense a seeker. A seeker is looking for other people who care that will help him to Christ. Also walked into a home one time, my wife and I with our little child, and we're talking to an individual and had interest, and our little one is wandering around the living room there and picks up something that was sitting there on the floor. And I was immediately informed that that cost a lot of money. Put down. And now we're like, let's be careful. We don't break something here. That didn't make me feel very good. It made me feel cautious. It made me feel a little bit, keep this child under control. He wasn't running around wrecking the room. He just picked something up that was right at hand. How does that make somebody feel? Welcome? Use discretion. Use caution and be careful in everything. You fill in the details. You decide what's best to do. But make sure people feel an open, warm welcome. Sometimes we don't feel so good. Sometimes we're busy. Sometimes we have other things to do. Just remember, everything is passing away. Souls will move on into eternity. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. See your good works and glorify God. Let's kneel for prayer. we come again this morning thanking you, blessing you, grateful for the things you have done for us, grateful and thankful for eternal salvation, grateful and thankful for Jesus Christ and the message, thankful that the apostles went out and preached and became fishers of men, and thankful for every faithful person since then that has helped bring the message to us. Lord, this morning, as we look at this subject and think about these things, Lord, help us in turn to be fishers of men. Lord, ever give us wisdom. Ever give us a heart of love. Ever give us a divinely inspired motivation to bring others to you. Lord, may your kingdom be filled with the faithful. And may we be there through all eternity praising you. Lord, until then, help us to be faithful. Lord, I pray especially for the youth here today attending this Bible school. And the younger ones that aren't at the Bible school, Lord, youth can be a time of turbulence and a time of questions. Lord, give them the answers they need. Lord, help them to overcome the many temptations that are prowling around trying to consume them. Help them to get a glimpse of the important things in life and inspire them, Lord. For we know they are the church of the future. They are the next generation. And as all of us older ones will be leaving, they will remain. Carry on the work. Inspire us, Lord, to be fishers of men.